Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew. And this podcast is being recorded March 30th, 2017. We're going to have this probably in the can hanging around until we have some sort of unforeseen recording issue later. So, just to put a timestamp, if we're making references of things that have, if this is the equivalent of recording a podcast on September 10th, 2001, you know, just realize that we may not be up on all the trending news items when you're hearing this now. But tonight we're going to talk about the year I didn't write down, State of Play.
2009,
State of Play, directed by Kevin MacDonald, who's my favorite kid in the hall. Okay, it's not the same Kevin MacDonald. This is the Kevin MacDonald who directed The Last King of Scotland.
Hey, this movie turned a profit. I'm shocked.
You know, this movie was my pick, and I'll just say it. I enjoyed this movie. Now, upon further review, I think I would have enjoyed the series that it was based on probably a lot better. It's a BBC series starring Trainspotting's Kelly MacDonald, Bill Nighy, James McAvoy, Polly Walker, among others.
Okay, yeah. I had a really disorienting beginning to this movie. Actually, for a really long time watching it. Because I didn't really pay attention. And I saw a political blah blah British remake blah blah. And in my head, I confused it with the comedy In the Loop.
Oh.
Oh, geez.
So I was expecting like a political satire. And it took me probably way too long to figure out that, no, this is a serious movie. Watching those, like the opening scenes, thinking it's a comedy is a totally different read.
Yeah, it's pretty
good. Like, and he gets the pizza guy. That's hilarious.
Apparently, trivia is Brad Pitt and Edward Norton were originally signed for the roles. But through some divine comedy of errors and timing and writer strike, Brad Pitt couldn't do it and was replaced by Russell Crowe. And then the movie rewrite went on so long that Norton was unavailable, so they got Ben Affleck.
Well, you know what? I think that maybe did this movie a favor. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. Ed Norton is a good actor, and Brad Pitt is a good actor. But this is...
That's the smoochie.
This is the movie. That's a movie I haven't seen all the way through. This is the movie that made me, I think, maybe even say out loud that I forget that Russell Crowe is a good actor. I enjoy watching Russell Crowe movies for the most part.
Yeah. I thought everybody in this movie was good.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, I think this is one of my, if not my favorite, it's one of my favorite Jason Bateman movies.
He was great. Helen Mirren was great.
Yeah. And it was so. This is a movie about journalism.
Sure,
it's commentary on commentary.
Yeah, well, I find myself, and again, because it's something I have never done, I'm sure I have a naive view of journalism, but I like the idea of pure journalism that we don't see much anymore, and maybe we never did. But this movie has some interesting questions because it's all about a Washington Globe reporter, Cal McCaffrey, played by Russell Crowe, who's an old school, like, gumshoe type reporter.
How much more Irish were they trying to make Russell Crowe in this movie, by the way?
Well, it's...
it was a little over the top.
See, when you think this is a comedy, that intro scene where he's listening to that music makes a lot more sense.
I don't know. Again, this is going to be tough because I guess we could spoil the whole movie, which we're going to have to, I think, in some sense. But let's start out this way. Starting with Brother Jay, did you enjoy this movie?
Well,
that's his no posture right there. I can tell.
I'm not even going to say it, but I'm thinking it.
I didn't hate this movie. And if I were to say, compared to another movie that we may or may not recently have reviewed or may have reviewed years ago, this movie is better than the Bond Living Daylights movie. So,
yeah.
No, I didn't hate this movie, but I had some problems with this movie.
Did it work as a thriller for you?
I didn't get an overwhelming sense of tension in this movie. I never felt the urgency or the peril. It wasn't really till the end where I started to feel tense, but some of the tension in the early and middle part of the movie just didn't, it rang false to me.
I didn't really experience this movie as a thriller as much as almost like a strict procedural.
Yeah, I would say that. It didn't get suspense, but I mean, it kept the story kept moving, and I was interested in the resolution, but I didn't feel any sense of, you know, any sense of urgency or like I said, I didn't feel the tension.
Have you seen the movie Spotlight?
No.
Yes.
Spotlight was maybe what I wanted this movie to be, except not. This is obviously not based on a true story. And Spotlight was. And I highly recommend that movie. This is no All the President's Men, because while it was a procedural, I think you nailed that. It wasn't, you know, the thing about All the President's Men is it really gave you a sense of, like, that newsroom and giving that feel. Just the sets and everything were, gave you a big sense of their work environment. In this case, there wasn't really much of that, right?
Well, in All the President's Men, you felt you never quite trusted what was going on around the reporters, but you trusted the reporters. You trusted the interaction of the two main characters. In this, I never trusted the interactions of the two main characters.
That's true. Well, and yeah, I think, Jason, you nailed the part of it. It doesn't have enough tension. Like, there's not enough there.
Right. I think it was trying to be two different movies at the same time, when it would have been better served if it would have gone one way or the other. If it had been more procedural and trying to be less spy spooky, it would have done better. Or if they would have just gone full on, like, Ghost Rider tension, it would have been much better.
I think maybe you're setting the bar a little high for this movie, because I don't think this is sort of a movie that doesn't really get made anymore. It's sort of like a middle of the road. It's not a huge blockbuster, but it's not like a really tiny independent. It's just kind of a small contained movie. And what I think works about it is it knows what it is. It doesn't try and be too expansive. It has a little bit of action, but doesn't go overboard with it. Has a couple twists, and whether or not they work is debatable, but, you know, it doesn't try and go too crazy with trying to trick the audience. It has a male and a female lead working together, and it doesn't force them into a romantic relationship. I think I think this movie is really competent about what it's trying to do, and it's not overly ambitious in a good way.
But most of what you just said also applies to the movie The Ghost Rider, and that was much better movie.
Oh, absolutely.
And that was a small, self-contained movie, and that wasn't trying to pull too many twists and turns. And so, I don't know.
The Ghost Rider, I mean, I agree that was a better movie, but The Ghost Rider was definitely a thriller, and it was like a fish-out-of-water thriller. This is not that. You're right, this is more procedural.
I think part of my problem with this movie is they kept teasing the backstory of this movie, which had no substance.
Yeah.
They kept alluding to this great past that they had, except that they referred to it in such a way that without having – it just wasn't believable. It just seemed – there wasn't enough substance there with enough history for us to experience that makes it believable or – allows us to bring that forward in ourselves, in our head, for me anyway. I couldn't bring that forward in the story to incorporate that into the rest of the story.
No, that's actually a really good point. That is one part that did not work for me. Ben Affleck and Russell Crowe and Robin Wright did not inhabit the same past. They did not have a shared history, no matter how much this movie tried to convince you they did.
Yeah, that chemistry never materialized for me anyway.
Okay, and that's the thing. And let me set it up a little bit for the plot for those who haven't seen this movie. We have Russell Crowe, who's the reporter. We have young reporter, Della Fry, played by Rachel McAdams, who's the more of the social media type online wing of the reporters. The big editor of the paper is Cameron Lynn, played by Helen Mirren, who plays like a Catherine Graham character. And then on the other mains are Congressman Stephen Collins, played by Ben Affleck.
Who is basically Gary Condit.
Yeah, exactly. He is Gary Condit. And I think Ben Affleck is a good choice for this because he does play a good kind of smarmy is too strong a word, but flashy congressman.
Well, and he looked old and weathered. They made him look really... He looked like an aged, weary senator.
Yeah, he looked haunted and stressed. He looked like a Batman, I think, maybe.
I thought he looked way too young for this role.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I could see where that would... Well, obviously because he and Russell Crowe are supposed to be peers, and Russell Crowe does not look especially young in this.
No.
Well, we have a... talk about spoilers. We have a very House of Cards scene where the senator's aide, or one of the senator's aides, is killed by a train. And it comes out, or there's information, speculation from the media, because he is conducting a hearing, and he mentions her in the hearing and gets obviously choked up. And that causes a media firestorm where... They basically, the media accuses him of having an affair with the aide. Now, the congressman's wife, again, I have a hard time watching Robin Wright Penn.
Kelly Capwell.
Yeah, well, no, it's not that. It's that I have a hard
time.
There was a time where I thought the Princess Bride was Kelly Capwell. But I have a hard time watching her in this role and not immediately thinking about House of Cards. So that probably worked against...
The Princess Bride was Kelly Capwell.
No, but you know what I mean.
No, I have no earthly idea what you mean.
Well, when I see Robin Wright now, I don't think of Kelly Capwell. But when I saw Robin Wright then, I did think of Kelly Capwell.
Gotcha.
So Robin Wright... For me, she was Robin Wright Penn at the time. So Robin Wright, for me, now is House of Cards Robin Wright. So maybe that works against her. She's not really very warm. She's not presented very warmly. And yeah, there's no chemistry. And here's another slight spoiler. Because the congressman and the reporter went to school together, also with the wife, the reporter and the wife had some sort of sexual relationship briefly. So there's tension there.
Also, the Russell Crowe needed to wash his damn gross oily hair.
Russell Crowe needed all sorts of grooming. So, you know, I think we could have lost the Robin Wright character completely. Not, maybe not the character, but like the whole backstory. I think you're right. It doesn't really lead anywhere other than I guess it shows that he has maybe he doesn't have 100% loyalty to his congressman friend.
Right.
He has loyalty to his congressman friend as long as it is helping either strengthen the his relationship with the senator's wife or the senator's wife's relationship with him. He's less interested in them having a better relationship.
And then we have all the shenanigans in the background, which I guess do we want to spoil it? I mean, there are some twists and turns that I think are interesting, and I think they for the most part, worked. I love Jason Bateman's character. I thought he was great. He comes in at the end of the movie where he's a PR representative for an arms manufacturer. Military contractor? What do you call those? Defense Department contractor?
Yeah. Jason Bateman needs to play more villains like this, like he did in Juno.
Exactly, yeah. What movie or what TV show was he in before Valerie's
Family? Was Valerie's Family?
Because, of course, I was fond of his sister, Justine, who is in...
Family Ties.
Family Ties, thank you. Last one.
Mallory!
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Oh, I always hated Scott Valentine because he wasn't smart enough for her.
Oh, he was in Little House on the Prairie and Silver Spoons.
Silver Spoons, yes.
Okay. Didn't he kind of always play like a smarmy kid?
Yes.
He has that punchable face.
Yeah, I think that's it. He has punchable hair. Maybe not in this role.
But he had amazing hair in this role.
Yeah. No, this role was great. So basically there's intrigue with this. The congressman is leading an investigation about this military contractor who is basically what, like Halliburton? Isn't that what the analog would be?
Blackwater.
Yeah, maybe. Yep.
Blackwater, yeah.
And we have Jeff Daniels as no one's gonna be surprised that he plays a corrupt congressman, an older congressman. He does his job well. He gives a yeoman performance.
He's the majority whip, right?
I think so, yeah.
Russell Crowe's desk was scary.
That was great, though.
His car was scary.
Yes.
Yeah, it was great, though. Like that part of it was fun. I like the talk about journalism, and Helen Mirren didn't have, you know, she only played like one note, but it was a good note where she's the editor who does have a conflict between, the fact that the paper has owners and they have to try to get as much page views or papers being sold or circulation numbers or whatever you want to call it to make money. But at the same time, they have to be true to their journalistic ethics.
And she got to swear a lot too.
Yeah.
That was good.
And there was tension. Russell Crowe playing the old dog reporter.
She used up all the tension. That's where it went.
You think? So I've been watching, this is the tangent that gives this episode any kind of length. I've been watching Kolchak the Night Stalker from 1973. Wow. It started out with two TV movies and then became a series for 2 years. And let me tell you, it's formulaic. It's where we get X-Files Monster of the Week episodes. It's basically that format. Every week is a Monster of the Week, and Kolchak gets into situations where he finds out some mystery, but for some reason, he never has enough proof, so that he never gets to file the story the right way. But because Darren McGavin plays Kolchak, it's fantastic. And the opening of Kolchak the Night Stalker, if you get a chance, I'm sure you can find episodes on YouTube, just the opening is Kolchak coming to the office and he's whistling this happy little tune. And he's by himself in the office. He comes in, he grabs a, he's wearing like a seersucker suit and, you know, a straw hat or whatever. He comes in, he grabs a cup of coffee or a donut. He throws his straw hat and misses the hat rack by his desk. By this time, you have not just the happy whistling, but you have like more instruments come in. And it's kind of like, it reminds me of the Odd Couple theme. And he sits down on his typewriter and he starts typing. And as he's typing, the music gets a little bit more frenetic because it keeps flashing between him, his fingers and his face and the page. And you see he's typing about murder and monsters and stuff. And so the music ratchets up. And at the end, Darren McGavin like looks up from his typewriter, stops typing, looks up. The shadows kind of move across his face. And then they have the office fan stop and the clock stop. The camera kind of pans around his face, zooms in, and then he turns. It just freezes on a blurry image of him turning in his eye, and he looks scared. And it is like a really horrifying image. It turns from a jaunty, jolly thing in, like, what, a minute to, like, setting the tone of being, oh, yeah, there's, like, super scary stuff that could be happening here. And they do
it's like the thing.
Well, they do it a couple times in transitions because, frankly, a lot of the episodes, the monster of the week is really just a guy in a gorilla suit. But they do a really cool things where they don't show the monster a lot, which is good. It's always a good thing we don't see the monster because then it's scarier. But also they do
things. It's Hitchcockian.
Well, and when you do see the monster, you like just before a commercial, you like the monster will break out of, you know, will like open up a closet door or whatever, or you know, jump through a window. They have a lot of people jumping through windows, and you get like a freeze frame of the blurry image of the guy in the monkey suit, which makes it much more menacing because you don't see it for a guy in a monkey suit necessarily. So you've got this funny, and like Darren McGavin, just he moves funny. He's got like a comic way about him, but he's and then of course he has a harried reporter or editor, and he's got this this sort of goofy Frasier and or gay guy who is like the other reporter that is always trying to be a little bit better than Kolchak. And you've got the lady who sits next to him who writes the crossword puzzles and stuff. And, oh, she answers like the Dear Mallory ads or whatever. But it's, for 1974, it's really great. I mean, it's not technically super. But also, the person who writes a lot of the scripts is David Chase.
Hmm.
And David Chase from The Sopranos, among other things. So, it's got some good stuff in there. So I highly recommend Kolchak, and he's a reporter also, so there's some journalistic ethics there too. Although, of course, his stories end up being way too tabloidy, so his editor is always like, no, no. And he always shows up saying, Karl Kolchak, INS, which, because it's independent news service. But let me tell you, especially when he plays in like Las Vegas or whatever, you show up at some place and you say, you know, Kolchak with INS, but half of the people should leave out the back door.
Scatter.
Yeah, especially these days, actually. Turn it to the modern era. Now, they did a remake of Kolchak where I guess they make him a lot more dark. And I think that is a mistake. Because the thing about Karl Kolchak is he's got a good, like, good reporter sense, but he knows. Like, you know, he doesn't take himself too seriously. And as the story gets weirder, he realizes that he's going to need a lot more evidence than he ever has. So he's working on it, but it's just he's just never quite going to get there, which is already kind of a comedic thing, if that makes sense. So highly recommend Kolchak the Night Stalker.
Sons of bitches.
Oh, Fragile. Maybe it's Italian.
Exactly.
So why did I bring up Kolchak? That's a good question that I don't have the answer to now.
Because you're tangent man.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, maybe about tension and things. I mean, and about, you know, when you're talking about, like, the whole idea of, okay, do we have enough of a story to run the story? That's always, like, it should be a tension thing. Although, again, these days it's hard to find evidence of, or maybe it's just easier to find evidence when newspapers, some of which have great histories, will run a story when they don't have enough evidence, and it's embarrassing, and it makes everybody look bad. And now when we have the president of the United States, who's doing everything he can to discredit the media at every stage, you know.
Yeah, that was one interesting anachronism in this movie that's only 8 years old, is how the Rachel McAdams character is so derided for being the online blogger. You know, she's not a real reporter in the eyes of many in this movie, where, yeah, it's kind of flipped nowadays. It's all about bloggers and social media presence and getting the story out there first and getting clicks instead of selling copies. Yeah, and it's hard to imagine that it was just this long, not so long ago, that they were still focusing on the old school style of journalism as being the only true journalism worth talking about.
Yeah, and it's now it's just a weird time where, you know, the term fake news is really kind of a pretty serious allegation that works. I mean, it sticks. That's the beauty of our current president. In case you're listening to this in the far future, that's Donald J. Trump is our current president now. You know, he's already, you know, the master of labeling somebody with a tweet in a way that really sticks, you know, like Crooked Hillary, or what was the Marco Rubio one? Little Marco. You know, just ways that would, just things that are catchy and people love it you know, like, there's an audience for tabloid journalism. So now it's kind of all drifting toward the tabloid journalism. And now, yeah, you look at news sites, you know, seeing stories that I know a little bit behind the scenes about, it's interesting that, you know, they just, yeah, they rush out on our local newspaper, which is already weird. It was the Anchorage Daily News, and now it's the Alaska Dispatch News, because it was bought by a billionaire hobbyist. So the reportage is all two sentences, and then it'll be updated later. So you'll get the story will be like, you know, even when you get a bigger story, you still have the original story. So it all is just a series of blog posts.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the future, right? I mean, we're going to get more and more of our news strictly on our phone.
No, people don't have any attention spans, and then TLDR, you know, they don't want to read something that's long or invasive.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Or in depth, or requires too much thought. They want it pre-digested.
Well, and headlines are awesome because, you know, and again, I'm not trying to be superior. I'm TLDR all the time. But if you read a headline and then you actually read the story and the story doesn't say what the headline says the story might say, that happens a lot.
Oh, clickbait.
Yeah. And so is that fake news? I mean, kinda. But yeah, it's crazy. We live in weird times for that.
I think one of the problems I have with this movie is that they have the beginning where Anne calls Cal, the reporter, and she's needs to see him. She's talking about all the reporters that are hanging out the house, and she needs to escape, and she's just at her wit's end.
Yeah,
and then they go to a bar where she's seen in public with the reporter, as if the other press wouldn't know exactly where she was.
Well, that's the other thing, is now there's like, you know, we're used to make fun of places like London as being like the most surveilled city, where you're pretty much always on camera. So your privacy, Big Brother, blah, blah, blah. We've already got that now. They were trying to make a list at work of, you know, people that had internet cameras or security camera systems that were just pointed out toward the street or whatever, in case we needed it for some reason. And it turns out it's too big a list to manage. Now everybody's got their Ring doorbell cam and, you know, or the Nest cams or whatever. Yeah, so we didn't really give away State of Play. I don't think I want to. I think I'm recommending it to people. What about you guys? Brother Jay?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad movie. I mean, I didn't feel like I wasted my time watching it. I didn't feel very satisfied by the ending. So I wouldn't invest too much into this. But if you're bored and you just want to kill a couple hours, it's not a terrible way to do it. You get some good performances from the acting in this movie. You know, Russell Crowe's hair has a life of its own. Some of the acting I had problems with, but there's one point Helen Mirren is quite impressively stabbing at a telephone, which is kind of very amusing to watch. And in spite of Creedence Clearwater Revival being the end credit song, which I despise them, it has the best movie closing sequence I've seen in some time.
Like the end credit sequence?
Yeah, because it's the paper going to press.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, that was a fun closing.
I mean, if you want to get me to watch the credits, that's what you do. Because I sat through the whole thing just to watch that.
So it's you want industrial.
That was better than some parts of the movie.
Yeah, well, so turns out credit sequences are important sometimes.
Yeah, so no, I would recommend it. It's a solid movie. It's a good movie. It's not a great movie, and it's not. I don't know. I think I equated this is like the Chinese food movie. It was fine for the moment, but I felt hungry after. So.
I think this is like a fantastic, like, low expectations movie. Like, if you don't have much emotional investment going in, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. I knew nothing about this movie, obviously, because I thought it was a totally different movie. But I knew nothing about it going in. And I was very pleasantly surprised. As a great cast, nobody's really phoning it in. It doesn't try and do too much. So it's heavier than like a really light movie, but it's not something that you really have to sink your teeth into to enjoy. So I would totally recommend this movie.
Yeah, me too. It's, again, I found it to be perfectly acceptable, like B-level movie, and I just was happy to see Russell Crowe in a way that I was, you know, it's like reminded me that, hey, he's not just the guy from The Gladiator. I've heard that the movie The New Guys, have you seen that? No, not The New, The No. Nice Guys.
I have.
Yeah, was it good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to be good, and when I saw the trailer, I'm like, who wants to watch a fat Russell Crowe movie? And you realize, wait, that's just Russell Crowe. You know, I shouldn't body shame him.
That's Shane Black, right?
Is it? Does it happen at Christmas? that's. I learned that from you. That's all I have now. Is if Shane Black movie, if it doesn't happen at Christmas, it's not really a Shane Black movie.
Yeah, that's Shane Black.
Cool. Have you guys seen Eye in the Sky with Helen Mirren?
No.
No.
It's interesting. She plays a military leader of some kind in Britain, and she's basically in charge of surveillance, and they have an operation in Afghanistan or maybe Pakistan. Actually, I think it's probably Pakistan. Someplace where they have to be very careful about drone bombing places, and of course use Americans' drones, and so it's all about having enough evidence, like what is acceptable risk. I like Helen Mirren when she has a little more notes. Like, again, she, like I said, this was pretty much a one note performance in State of Play, but it was good. Unfortunately, she's really like reserved and cold in Eye in the Sky too, so you don't really get to see a lot of like anguish, although, you know, it reads anguish, but like in Zero Dark Thirty, the Jessica Chastain character, you could see her anguish. And Helen Mirren is not that, but of course she's not also a low-level person. She's a high-level person, so it makes a difference. Anyway, I would recommend it. It's interesting. It's got some good, some beautiful scenes of like little tiny drones and just like market day in a Islamic small town. So, anything else? Any housekeeping?
I did start watching The Americans.
And?
How far did you get?
5 episodes in. They just shot Reagan.
Wait, spoiler.
No, they didn't personally do it. Oh, that's okay. Where they are in history.
I thought, wait, I thought John Hinckley shot Reagan. Damn it.
It's interesting because it brings me back to my childhood and the Cold War, and I can identify with the mentality and some of the situations and the conversations and the attitudes, not obviously to the depth of the show. And obviously we didn't have, to our knowledge, Russian spy parents, but, it's pretty interesting so far. It's actually pretty well done. I'm impressed by the production value too. So.
Yeah. And a fun little, Tusk number, right?
Yeah.
Is that in the opening, the pilot?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excellent. Okay.
Yeah, I'm really digging it. So I'm enjoying it. It's
And Kerry Russell is badass.
Absolutely.
Oh, sweet. She was best known for cutting her hair, right?
And Waitress, a movie I liked quite a bit.
Oh, okay. What was the movie? TV show she was in?
Felicity.
Oh, okay, yes. Sorry, I stepped on you, Jason. What were you saying?
No, I was going to say Waitress is one of my favorite live songs. So.
Oh, yeah. I assume it's based on the live song?
Yeah, totally. Did you know that I was introduced to the term goosed when our neighbor goosed herself on your hand, Eric?
Our neighbor?
What?
Paula?
Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, God. Okay, I don't remember that specifically, but I certainly remember Paula.
I do. It was in our computer room, and I think... she was kind of pinned in the corner, and you were kind of sitting, I was at the computer, you're kind of sitting behind me, and she was trying to squeeze between us, and I think she lost her footing and happened to sit right back, right on your hand, like fell on your hand, and both of you went like, ooh! And she was like,
for
sorry.
For different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. She was apologetic, and you're like, dude, no need to apologize to me. And then she turned bright red and scampered out.
Oh, that's
the happiest my hand has been in years.
Yeah. I was like, what happened? And you said, she just goosed herself. I had no idea what that meant. Fun times.
Yeah. Exactly. Whee.
Shout out to Paula.
Yeah, absolutely. You go, Paula.
She's still around.
I'm sure. Yep.
Married and has kids.
Good deal. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.